Yeah, I'm like Neo now.
Oh, that was good. That was good.
That's Morpheus.
What's going on, everyone? Jurassic Views, Ottawa's Raptors podcast. Still summer. Don't talk to me about the fall, even though we're in September. We still got 3 weeks till this summer thing ends, and thank goodness the temperatures of southern and eastern Ontario agree with me, because it is 32 degrees, but it's still summer. I'm still enjoying the heat, and today we are going to talk about a historic win for Canada basketball, just an incredible tournament in the FIBA World Cup, but we're going to break down yesterday's Spain-Canada game. Now, I'm sure for many of you who watched the game yesterday, you'll admit it was frustrating in moments. It was stressful in moments. At other times, it was jubilant moments. It was, wow moments. It was, did that really happen kind of moments. I didn't get to watch this game live. As I said when I recorded the last episode, I was driving from Ottawa to the GTA. My mother, her birthday is next week. I was coming down for the Labor Day weekend to be able to celebrate with her and my family, her greatness, her dedication as a mother, as a spouse, but just as a lovely human being. I love my mom, big mama's boy. So I was coming down and we celebrated my mom's birthday. She requested that we do a morning and early afternoon, a little walk in the country, a leisurely drive outside of Saga. And while all this leisurely, relaxing moments were happening, lunch on the terrace of, a higher end restaurant that actually my parents had their wedding reception at. So talk about personal and familial history. While all that was happening, while we were doing that, Canada and Spain were in an extraordinarily tense matchup. And so I didn't even get to watch the game live. I was just watching the score, which is usually what I do for the Raptors, but I wanted to watch Canada games. This one was deeply uncomfortable. This was almost, 76ers Raptors game 7 2019 level. I thought it was going to end more like Celtics Raptors in the bubble 2020 game 7 styles, the way it was going. But my gosh, did this game live up to its hype? Did both teams bring out their maximum energy? Both coaches, who are high-level coaches, who have coached at high levels internationally in Europe, and of course at the NBA level, Jordy Fernandez, Sacramento Kings assistant coach, Sergio Scorleola, the former Raptors assistant coach. He now coaches as the head coach for Real Madrid, I believe. So these are high-level coaches. They brought their A games, for heaven's sakes. And listen, I watched the replay. There were two replays yesterday. There was one in the afternoon. Of course, this game was live at 9:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time in Toronto, here in southern and southeastern Ontario. But they had a replay, I think, at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I did not watch that. I had other things I had to do. I think I was eating coconut cream pie at 3 p.m. And then they had another replay at, I believe, 8 o'clock. Yes. At 8 p.m., they had another replay on Sportsnet. Thank goodness for the replays, because the 3-minute highlight package that I watched while brushing my teeth was not enough. It did not give the full picture, the full scope of the game, the situation, the magnitude of the moment. So I had to rewatch this game in its entirety, 8 p.m., which I was happy to do. My father was gracious enough to go read his book because he had seen the second half replay in the afternoon, where I was talking to my mom about how she's doing and about her birthday. She loves to debrief, kind of like what we do on the pod. She does after every single family event, no matter how large or small, or personal event. My mom has... Listen, my mom would be a great podcast interviewer. She doesn't listen to the pod. She's not into basketball at all. She finds the whole thing not odd, but like just way too stressful. She feels the stress of my father and I through the ceilings, through the walls, anytime we're watching and we're in the same house. So she does not listen to the pod, but she would be a great podcast host. Incredible interviewer. She does it every time I get home. Zaya has gone over to my house, my parents' house, many times. He has actually gone to my parents' house at least a dozen times over the 20 years of friendship by himself for like 3 or 4 hours. He'll hang out with my parents. And most of that is my mom asking about his life and getting an update, which I'm sure Zaya doesn't mind the attention at all. That said, I knew the results of the game. I had celebrated with my father at the Terracotta Inn parking lot that Canada had come back and won 88-85 right at the end of the game. We were celebrating in the parking lot before lunch. And then after lunch, an hour and a half goes by. He doesn't say a word. Maybe it's 2 hours. He doesn't say a word about the game during lunch. He was on his very best behavior because my father and I can talk about sports nonstop. If you've never heard Brian Diamond on the podcast, he has been on the podcast 3 times, at least once with Zaya, and maybe twice, and then once just with me. But if you want to hear how, you know, like a tidbit of how I come to sports and fandom naturally, listen to March 2021's episode. I believe it's just after the trade deadline or just before the trade deadline. And my father goes off about how it must have been after the trade deadline, how foolish it was for Masai Ujiri to let go of Norman Powell. It is just textbook fandom from my father. Anyways, at lunch, at my mother's birthday lunch, he has the discipline and the wisdom to not say a word about the game, not even ask questions about who scored how many points or who hit the clutch free throws down the stretch or, you know, who made big plays. Not even investigate that. Not that I knew all those, the answers to all those questions, but I knew some. He stayed disciplined, and then afterwards, he asked me in the parking lot, did we really win? Like, I told him the game score. I told him it was real. I wasn't, you know, joking with him. I wasn't trying to, like, pull a prank. So he finally believed me, and he asked me again 2 hours later, did we really win the game? And so he had already rewatched it. He allowed me to watch it in the downstairs man cave that he has built at my parents' house. And I watched this game. And let me tell you, before I get into the game, I was so stressed. I was yelling at the TV as if it was live, already knowing the results. I was so stressed. Usually in a Raptors game, if it's the playoffs, I burn about 500 calories yelling, flexing, jumping up and down, pacing back and forth, high-fiving. Sometimes I'll actually do push-ups or get on a stationary bike just to relieve some of the stress, just to have, like, you know, a pressure valve pressed, you know. And yesterday, I knew the score. The game was already over. Shea Gildress was already calming down, you know, had already calmed down RJ Barrett and Dylan Brooks, Saga stand up. And I still was stressed watching this game. Anyways, what a win. What a win. Let's break it down a bit. This game was huge for many reasons. I'm sure you, many of you know who watched the game. I'm sure many of you knew that not only was this a chance to get to the quarterfinals, but because the Dominican Republic, Puerto Rico, and Brazil had already lost their games, or had already lost a game in the second round, a Canada win would get them to the Olympics. Now, I've mentioned my father, I've mentioned my mother, I'm going to mention my brother. He doesn't listen to the podcast either. Now, my father does. I will say that in my father's defense. He does listen to the podcast quite religiously. You know, he might not listen every episode, but out of the 290, I think this is the 290th episode, I think my father's probably listened to half of them, which automatically gives him sainthood for spending that much time. Zaya does not listen that much. Courtney does not listen that much. I only listen to it as much as I do because I have to edit and review to make sure that I didn't say something absolutely foolish or that a guest, you know, didn't have a whole bunch of time cut off because of internet connections. So, yeah, Courtney and Zaya don't listen as much as my father's, just to give you context. But my brother, if he's listened to one episode, it's only because Evelyn was on in 2021. So, regardless, my father lets me watch the game. My mother, her and I were debriefing her birthday event. Happy birthday, Mom, again. But my brother, who doesn't listen to the podcast at all, yes, I will shame my brother, Blake. even his daughter has listened to one episode because her friends, she has a couple friends who have listened to some episodes because they're into basketball. But my brother he said yesterday to my dad, and like I said, my dad is, you know, I'm cut from the same cloth as my father. My dad might not get into the details of the game, but he loves it. He wears his, you know, heart on his sleeve. He's in it. He's watching every FIBA game. He's watching the interviews pre and post game. He's listening to the analysis. He's watching highlights, even if he's watched the game. My brother says, oh, it's no big deal. It's a meaningless game on a Sunday morning. So, Blake, if you're listening, this is not a meaningless game. Not only does this win, if we were to win this game yesterday, not only does it get us to the Olympics, which we haven't done in 24 years, not only is it a win against Spain, a top three ranked team. I believe they were the number one team coming into this tournament because they had won the World Cup in 2019. They had finished in the top four, I believe, in the top six. They finished at the Olympics, and then they won Eurobasket last year. They were a top three team, I think the number one team. We have never beat, in the history of our program, certainly not in the last 20 years, we have never beat a one seed. We've never even beat a top three team before this tournament. And here we are playing Spain to try and get to the Olympics for the first time in 24 years. That's one thing. Secondly, we haven't been to the quarterfinals of a World Cup since, I believe, 1994, when we hosted the damn thing. And I think we flamed out pretty quick in the quarterfinal, if I'm not mistaken. Steve Nash, Rick Fox were on that team. So, like, this is not a meaningless game. And, you know, for someone who doesn't watch the NBA that much, like my brother, someone who's, watches the NBA, watches international basketball when it suits him, doesn't like to dive too much into team sports. He's a huge Liverpool fan, but even then, he was satisfied when they won the league, when they won, or at least went to the Champions League again in 2018, 2019, something like that. So he's just, you know, been quite satisfied. He's seen enough. He's almost, you know, he's turning 48 this year. He's sad. So everything's like, whatever. Let's just treat it for what it is. It's an entertainment. And he moves on. Very, like, matter of fact. But I just want to remind you, Blake, from a sports perspective, from a basketball perspective, from a Canadian basketball perspective, this is big time. This is an extremely important moment. So we have this opportunity to beat the number one team, to qualify for the Olympics in the first time in 24 years. And we're doing it with a young core. Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, Dylan Brooks, Nikhil Alexander-Walker, Lou Dort, RJ Barrett. No one's over 26 years old of that group. We've also got Benedict Mathurin, Zach Eddy, Andrew Nembhard, Jamal Murray, not at this tournament. Sheldon Sharp, not at this tournament. Tons and tons of guys. There was other draft picks that I'm forgetting, like Leonard Miller. So tons of guys who are Canadian, who will continue the momentum of this program, and will do so even more, will be more interested and invested if we win this game. Monster, monster moment in Canadian basketball history. So that's the setup. We know going into this game, if Spain loses, they're out because they threw a game away against Latvia. We know if Spain beats Canada, they're out because they threw a game away against Brazil. Shocking loss to a Brazilian team that had one former NBA guy. They have another young guy who's 21 who I think has some NBA possibilities. I'm not sure if he'll make it. He looks a lot like the young guy who got drafted by Miami, who played for UCLA. I'm not saying he's as good as him, but some similarities. And I think they're the same age at 21. So, but this is a much, you know, their talent is, there's quite a gap between Brazil and Canada, and we lose that game. So this game's significance for both teams is huge, is huge. Of course, we go into this game having rode a high in the first round, having beaten Spain in Spain in the pre-World Cup tournament. So we know we have the talent. We know we can, but now the tensions build. And here's something that the players said, many media members said before this game was played. This, these Canadian players, you go down the list of NBA players, even Zach Eddy, right? Even Zach Eddy, who played for the Boilermakers this year, he's never been to a Sweet 16 game, I don't think. He lost in the first round this year. He certainly hasn't been to the Final Four. So for Zach Eddy, biggest game of his career. Just to witness it. He's not even on the floor. He'll get there, probably get some minutes next year because he'll have more time to develop his footwork and his touch around the rim and his range, his understanding of defensive schemes in FIBA. Kelly Olynyk. Has he ever been to the conference finals? Has he ever played meaningful minutes in a conference finals? I'm not sure. I don't think so. Certainly if Kelly Olynyk was part of that 2017 Celtics team, that played against Braun and the Cavs, you know, which I think he might have been on, to be honest. They lost in five games, and it should have been a sweep. You look at Dwight Powell. He went to a conference final last year with the Mavs, but, you know, Golden State swept the Mavs. So the pressure moment, the high leverage, the opportunity to get to, like, a historic place, a one-or-done kind of moment, he didn't really have as he did in this game. Now, you could talk about the game they played against Phoenix in the second round. Maybe that's kind of the equivalent. But this game's probably has a bigger magnitude, and he probably has an even bigger role because he doesn't have Luke on his team, and you know, because he's not seen as a guy who needs to contribute as high a level on this as he does for the Canadian team. Lou Dort. Has Lou Dort been to the playoffs? If he has, maybe it was in the bubble. They really didn't do much. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander played in a play-in game this year. Might have played in two play-in games. I'm trying to remember all these things from this past year. They might have. And then they played Minnesota in the second game. So they might have had to play-in games. This is bigger than a play-in game. Dylan Brooks has been in the second round in the NBA playoffs. They played Golden State. They lost in six. It really wasn't close in game five or six, if I remember correctly. Those games weren't big as this one. This is huge. So you go down the list of all their NBA players. Nikhil Alexander Walker, sorry. Nikhil hasn't been in as high leverage a moment, and he certainly wasn't asked to do as much as he did here. RJ Barrett. I mean, he plays in New York, and he's played in three playoff series in New York. That's pretty big. But this one and done, this do or die kind of setting, he really didn't have. Even when they beat Cleveland, it was kind of an easier series. When Miami beat them, Miami kind of controlled the series. Miami should have won in five, to be honest. So even R.J. Barrett, you know, hasn't been in this big of a moment in their career where they're feeling the weight, where it is this do or die. So this is the biggest game of their careers. For Jordy Fernandez, biggest game as a head coach. He's never been a head coach at this level, NBA or international. Yes, assistant, but never this big. And now he's trying to get a team to the Olympics for the first time in 24 years. You know, some similarities. Game 7 against Golden State's first time they've been in the playoffs, Sacramento. But again, he's assistant coach. And this game was not easy. Spain, all the experience in the world. Great coaching. And have shown in recent years, lifting trophies, how good they can be. They've got Nunez, a young 19-year-old, just turned 19 a couple months ago, point guard. He's going to be in the NBA draft next year. You've got Aldama, who plays for Memphis, a Dylan Brooks teammate. Obviously, the Herman Gomen brothers. And even Juancho wasn't a top three guy on this team. Abrines, who used to play for OKC. This is a very talented, deep, savvy, well established, but highly decorated Spain team and program. So the level of difficulty, the degree of difficulty that this game is for Canada is huge. And then Spain gets up. And they get up early. They get up early because of passing. They get up early because of good motion offense. They get up early because, again, like Brazil, very physical play, and you're allowed that physical play in FIBA. The shooters for Canada, because they missed so many against Brazil, were very tentative. And so this was a tough game, and Canada gets behind Spain by 10 points in the second quarter. And they inch and claw, and they're trying to figure out, how are we going to get back in these games? They have pretty much a 7-man rotation with all the NBA guys. They you know, got Melvin Ejim in there for, you know, 3-4 minutes. Phil Scrub might have played 3 or 4 minutes. But for the most part, this was a 7-man rotation with just the NBA guys. And if they were going to get back into it, they had to be at their very best defensively. And at the half, they were down, I believe, 8 points. But they had been down double digits. And to start the third quarter, yes, the defense was pretty good. If you can hold a Spanish team to under 90, you're giving yourself an opportunity, especially if your offense isn't great or their defensive efforts are really good. And Spain had a 10-man deep team. They played 10 men yesterday, and they have defensive specialists. You know, I named some of the former NBA and NBA guys. They're all pretty good offensively. But then Spain has another 3 or 4 guys who are defensive specialists, like Diaz, who covered many possessions, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. So they played 10, 11 guys yesterday. They're cutting, they're moving, the ball is spraying from all areas of the half court. They're playing physical, they're getting out in transition, they're making free throws. Canada, although down double digits in the third quarter, got right back into it and tied at 52. tie it at 55, and they're only down 62-61. Kelly Olynyk had hit a couple shots. Lou Dort had made some inside buckets. Dwight Powell looked pretty good. RJ Barrett had a decent first half, first kind of 2.5 quarters offensively. Everyone was kind of chipping in for Canada. It wasn't a pretty game for either team. It was well played by Spain. You could tell Canada was chasing the game. Even when it was tied, you felt like Spain had a whole bunch of advantages just from experience and, of course, playing together. Because these guys grow up playing together. Canada, at a national level, is so disjointed for teams in their teenage years because you've got guys who are moving to the States to play their high school basketball. I looked at so many of the guys who are NBA players or soon to be NBA players like Zach Eddy. Grade 10, grade 11, they're going to the States for high school basketball because it's just a better system. It's a better training ground, development ground for them. In Spain, you do all your development until 18. You're doing all your development in Spain because it's that good. They have created that good a system. A lot of the basketball, sort of the soccer clubs, the big ones, Valencia, Real Sociedad, of course, Real Madrid and Barcelona, of course, those two teams, they're mega. But they all have basketball programs that put a lot of money. And then the national system, it's a small country. They're very tightly tied together. They're connected to each other. The national program is very connected, very well developed in Spain. So is the club level. So at 13, 14, 15, all the way up to 18, these guys are playing all their basketball together, close by. They know each other very well. They're like brothers. We don't have that same kind of connectivity. So when, you know, the national players go off to different European teams or even the NBA, they're still very much relationally connected, and they have a huge history together. And that was all on display as Spain was playing Canada through the first three quarters. And it really showed itself when Spain went to that 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th guy on their roster, and Canada didn't have that. They, you know, they were 7 strong from a talent perspective, but when they brought in 8th, 9th, 10th guy, there was so much disjointed play on both ends of the ball, and so they become a bit stagnant offensively. They become a bit hesitant offensively, and they're just not communicating or anticipating or intuiting. I don't know if that's a word. Because they don't know each other as well, because they haven't played with each other as much. And what happens at the end of the third quarter? Spain goes on an 11-0 run to finish the third quarter and get up 73-61. And it was that point as I was watching the ticker. Even when I was watching the replay and knew the result, I thought, holy cow, this game's over. I don't know how Canada gets back in it, even knowing the result. And then you start the third quarter. I think it was Dwight Powell had a nice inside bucket. Shea had a three-point play. And Dylan Brooks hits a three, and Canada's got it to 73-69, an 8-0 run coming out of the third quarter, and they're back in it again with 8 minutes to go, just 2 minutes into that third quarter. Spain gets a bucket, and then Canada struggles. It was like 76-69. RJ Barrett had 4 fouls. Luke Dort, I think, picked up his 4th foul sometime around there. but they're missing shots. Kelly Olynyk had a great look after it hit two in the third, misses in the fourth. RJ Barrett, two great corner pocket threes. I've seen him hit those threes in the first round. I've seen him hit it for the New York Knicks in Madison Square Garden. Bricks both. Dylan Brooks turns over the ball. Lou Dort misses two free throws. And you're thinking, it's just not our day. I don't know how we're going to pull this off. It just doesn't seem like it's our day. And then with about 5 minutes to go, Dylan Brooks hits a bucket. Shea gets another three-point play or hits a three. And then Nikhil Alexander-Walker, who is like 0 of 8 against Brazil. You thought maybe his confidence was totally removed from him. Maybe they did a Men in Black and erased his memory so that he didn't shoot a three. Even erased not just the Brazilian game, erased the fact that he even could shoot. That it was an option to shoot from three-point land. He drills a three to make it 78-74 in the corner on the left side. And that gets it close. And the confidence is up. And you're thinking, whoa, we're back in this. We're still in it. We're still fighting. And there was like 3 minutes to play. And you didn't know if we had enough time. And you didn't know, can we keep making defensive stops? Because at that point, 78-74, not only was time, you know, fading away from us, but you also had the fact that Spain had only scored 5 points through 7 minutes. And you were like, it's just a matter of time before this team scores. They have to, right? They have to. I think Willie Herman Gomez hits two free throws to make it 80-74. Dylan Brooks drills a three to make it 80-77. I believe this is all right. Might have been Shea to make it 80-77. We get another stop. So again, Spain at this point has only scored 7 points in 8 minutes in the entirety of the fourth. With their passing, with their motion offense, with all the connectivity, the Canadian defense is pressuring everything, is anticipating now everything, are fully locked in. And that talent and that belief start, and that athleticism really start to take it up a notch. We get another stop, and I think it was Dylan Brooks, buries a triple to make it 80-80. Dylan Brooks had 22 points and 6 rebounds last night. Didn't foul out like RJ Barrett, who had 16 points. Played a very good 2.5 quarters offensively. Then he fouled out mid to late fourth quarter. And with that three, it's 80-80. We get another stop. And I think Shea Gilgeous hits two free throws. No, he hits a step back to make it 82-80. We've got the lead. There's 1.5 minutes to play. We get another stop. Guys flying everywhere. Dylan Brooks kind of tiptoeing, doing his best tap dance routine on the baseline to get just out of the way of one of the cutting Spaniards who had just caught the ball. He's tiptoeing, tap dancing his way from contact so he doesn't pick up his fifth, so he doesn't send them to the line with a 2-point lead. And we get the ball back. They go out of bounds. We get the ball back. Shea Gilgeous hits two free throws, 84-80, with like 30 seconds to go. And it was just incredible to have been down 12. To now have this lead. just incredible comeback. To be able to play this level of defense, to limit Spain to this degree, was unbelievable. At that point, I think we had gone on like a, you know, 10-2 run or something. 11-2 run, my mistake. In the quarter, at that point, it was 23-7. Like, what an effort. But there's still time left. I think we split a pair at the line. Maybe Dwight Powell, and it's 85-82. They made a couple more free throws. Willie Herman Gomez did. He was good. Really good. And it shows, you know, with physicality, with connectiveness, with a smaller kind of half-court space, it showed why the FIBA game is different, but how effective some of these NBA guys can be because of a different context, a different environment, a different team, how effective, different rules, how effective they can be. And he was great. So we're up 85-82. We get another stop. And they get the ball game after a couple fouls with 4 seconds to play. 88-85. Shea Gildress had to make another two free throws. How clutch is Shea Gildress? How much ice is in this guy's veins? Wow. And, like, he has a bit of Kawhi to him in terms of, like, being unfazed, but also, like, not getting overly expressive either. Like, this was Kawhi against the Philadelphia 76ers in Game 4 in Philly kind of play. That's what Shea Gildress put on display. 30 points, manipulating defenses, drawing fouls, conserving energy. This guy almost played 40 minutes. He was just incredible. And now, battling to see who will be the best player of the tournament, him or Luka. Well, they play each other on Wednesday. But he was just unfazed, made so many monster shots, and then the clutch free throws. I mean, wow, to have a top 10, maybe even a top 7 guy in the world playing on your team. Just incredible. So he makes two free throws, 4 seconds to go. They inbound it. I thought that they might have fouled. On the broadcast, Alvin Williams said, as soon as they touch the halfway line, as soon as they touch the half line, it wouldn't be a bad idea to foul. And at that point, they inbound to a Brinas. I don't know if that was the guy they wanted to shoot. He was a good option. He's a good three-point shooter. He had made some shots all tournament. But when he catches it and starts dribbling to the half-court line, Lu Dort is right there. There is about 2 seconds to go. And I agreed with Alan Williams. In that moment, 2.5 seconds to go, you foul him. Worst case scenario, hits both free throws and you're being sent to the line and they have to do it all over again. And this time, they have to heave it to at least half court. So I was kind of in line. I was agreeing with, and I don't think they had any timeouts after that fact either. I was agreeing with Alvin Williams. I think this is a good decision. They decided to leave him. Lu Dort was right there with him. He didn't overplay him, which I thought maybe he could have. Overplay him so you can kind of, you know, get up more on his shot side. Let him dribble left. Get on his right hand when he goes up. He didn't. He just kind of kept him in front of him. Because if you give him a path, you know, it kind of screws with the player with the ball mentally, that maybe you should go further, and then you forget about the three-point line to some degree. But Lou Dort didn't do that. He just kept him in front of him. And then what happens? Abrines gets a pretty good look. Now, it was 35 feet away. But in today's basketball, 35 feet away inside the logo is still very, still a very makeable shot. We've seen guys hit that shot, right? Even not even the Stephs, the Trays, the Dames. We've seen loads of players. Fred VanVleet has hit shots from the logo. This might have been 32 feet out. Not a bad look. Dort in front of him, but not up underneath him or anything. He gets a pretty good look. He's the what helped in that situation was that Abrines was so busy trying to motor, you know, down the court, get close to the three-point line, that he was off balance when he was shooting. Abrines hits front rim. And it wasn't far off. Like, wow, it was close. Kind of like Vince against the Philadelphia 76ers in 01. It was right there. As difficult a shot as it was, as far as it was away, Abrines hits the front rim. It goes off the backboard. It goes out. Canada wins. And then there's some euphoria. There's some relief from not just Jordy Fernandez, not just the players, but of course, all of Basketball Canada, players who have played, players who are hoping to play, players who have played for the senior men's team, who have been on, you know, junior teams in the past or in the present, women's players who, again, were at in the semifinal of the last World Cup, finished fourth, and all of the fans of Canada basketball were celebrating. It was a great moment, and it was relieving. It really was a relieving moment for Canada basketball and for their fans. Huge, again, another big moment for the country. To play in the Olympics is huge. It's not easy. Only about three teams from the Americas even get in. And when you have the States there, you're looking at two other countries. When you've got Argentina, Brazil, the Dominican, Puerto Rico, now the Bahamas with DeAndre Ayton, Eric Gordon. You know, it is not easy to get to the Olympics. And here we are. We did it. And now we're in the quarterfinals of the World Cup. Again, I don't think we've been this far in the World Cup. Correct me, somebody, if I'm wrong. I don't think we've been this far since 1994. So what an achievement. And we have to be favored. We have to be seen as the favorite against Slovenia. We have to be seen as the favorite, partly because Slovenia is without a couple of their stars. They don't have the depth of talent that Canada does. A lot is asked of Luka. They don't have the size or the decorated program that a team like Spain or France or Australia has. Serbia, you could put in that group. So this is a very winnable game. Now, whether we win or not, Luka could go for 50 or could have 30 and 20, knowing Luka, and we're in trouble because he's just that good. But this will be an incredible game. I don't know if we win against Slovenia, if I'll do a pod. I don't know if I'll do a pod if we lose that game either. Be a bit melodramatic. But I'll be on sometime. It's quite possible I'll talk about it on the next pod when I have a guest, Amanda Coffey, as I talked about in the last pod. We'll be talking about her connection to Serbia, certainly Serbian basketball, but her heritage, Serbian heritage. And so at the very least, our recording next week, later this week on Sunday, we will talk about the FIBA World Cup. I don't know if between now and then I'll have the time or I'll want to. I guess it depends how far we go. But we'll see. We'll see. In the moment, who knows, right? You know how I am. Anyways, just a massive game. I wanted to get on the pod and talk about how big a moment this was in Canadian basketball. How incredible a game it was from the neutral's perspective. From, forget about the NBA, this is a great tournament. You know, I've heard others say that too who follow Canada basketball closely, media members as well. One of our the guys who we respect the most in media, Blake Murphy, he was talking about how big the moment was, and many others have too. The players, you know, they're quite removed from you know, Nash going to the Olympics and taking that team to the Final Four of that tournament with, you know, with Rowan Barrett, RJ's father. Rowan was born that year, and some of the players weren't even born in 2000, but many of them weren't old enough to even watch it. Like a Dylan Brooks wouldn't have memory of that. He's, you know, he was too young. He was 2-3 years old. So what a game, what a moment, a great achievement. And now there's more work to be done. As Shea said, Shea was focused on the title. And when you knock off a top three team in this tournament, and you see the USA get beat by Lithuania, who knows what can happen. Now, I would probably say the US is number one. I'd still keep them at number one. I'd probably say that Serbia's number two right now. Jovic, who plays for Miami, looks amazing. Bogdanovic, who plays for Atlanta, looks fantastic. They're missing, of course, Nikola Jokic, the best player in the world. But they're still very talented. NBA guys, guys who play in Europe, former NBA players. I think they're the number two seed. I think the number three seed at this point, probably a power ranking choice. But also what they've accomplished in the last 3-4 years. Germany has got to be seen as the number three seed. And then it's between us and Lithuania. You can kind of flip a coin. Depends on matchups. Certainly I wouldn't be comfortable if Canada played Lithuania, thinking that they're going to win. But Canada is the four seed. Slovenia is probably the six seed in this tournament of teams who are left. You know, they're probably better than Italy, I would say. So interesting that the teams that Canada and the U.S. get, the only America's team, they have the easiest, quote-unquote easiest, because neither team will be easy to deal with, Italy or Slovenia, but I think they're the weakest teams left. But what a tournament. What a great game. And it'll be a lot of fun to watch this game on Wednesday. Luka versus Shea. Slovenia, a team who's finished in the top four. I believe at the Olympics, they finished fourth. Lost to Australia, I want to say. And then, you know, teams are great, coaches are great. But man, I've gone long enough. I've almost gone an hour by myself here. Thanks for listening. I enjoyed it. I hope you did too. I hope you can soak up the moments before Wednesday, before the stress returns. I hope, you enjoy the sunshine. Enjoy the summer, because it's still summer. Don't let anyone tell you it's the fall. All right, y'all. Much love. Peace. I think I don't do treat more money.